I pledge allegiance to the red, white, and blue.
Welcome to Red, White, and Brews with Gru. I am your host, Greg Grugan, and this is my dream job. You know, talking to really smart, fun, intelligent people that I like with a cold brew in hand. And today I've got my good buddy, Paul Castro. Paul Castro, how do I talk about your resume? Paul is a lifelong educator. He's been a high school principal, a charter school superintendent. He now helps other superintendents with the, you know, pantheon of challenges they're dealing with. He's also a public safety advocate. We're going to get to that a little bit later. But I wanted to start our conversation by saying, welcome, brother.
Let's have a sip. Great to be here, Greg. I appreciate the invitation.
All right. Hey, astonishing results for HISD, a failed inner city school district where, you know, dozens and dozens of schools were producing kids who were basically functionally illiterate. And we have Mike Miles, a very controversial leader appointed by the state, brought in an extremely difficult strategy for people to accept. And within 2 years, we've had astonishing results. Talk about what you've seen, and is the progress real?
Yeah, so the progress is real. I think the most interesting fact is when, you know, 2 years ago, there were dozens of schools in HISD, they were sitting with an F. It had been taken over. It had been a hostile takeover. People were upset about it. Mr. Miles comes in. He's got some ideas, right? And his ideas are very straightforward, very clear. And what happened as a result is he got a lot of people upset at him. He was asking people to do things that a lot of times people were saying, well, that's impossible. That can't happen. This past week, you know, when school opened, not one single kid in Houston ISD walked into a school that had earned an F last year.
Extraordinary.
Crazy, right? And that alone should be something the city is celebrating, right? Should be something the city is getting behind and saying, this is awesome. This is outstanding. The how of Mr. Miles, some people might disagree with. And at the same time, you can't argue with results. You know, I talk to a lot of my good friends who are still teachers in HISD. And at the end of the day, my question is always the same. Do you think Mr. Miles could get the same results if he didn't do it the way he's doing it? And what they normally say is, I wish I could say otherwise, but a lot of people have been trying and it hasn't happened. Mr. Miles has tried. His team has been really outstanding. Rock solid, came in with a clear vision, and they execute. And they are working like dogs to make it happen. Most importantly, the teachers are working really hard. The kids are working really hard. And that's where the win is really sitting. You got kids who were, you have more kids, a lot more kids reading on grade level, because people are asking, what does that even mean? Why is it, you know, there? I was in a school yesterday, Jefferson Elementary, Friday, and Jefferson Elementary went from a D to an A in 1 year.
Incredible.
Nuts, right? And what that really means is more kids are reading on grade level. And when you're reading on grade level, you're more likely to be successful, not just in school, but in life. And what Mr. Miles has done is he's put together processes to help those kids get where they need to be. It's something to be celebrating.
Look, reading on grade level is so critical because it impacts not just what happens the next year, but the next 7, 8, or 9 years, the kind of progress that these students can make.
Yeah.
Is that a valid statement?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, first of all, people say, well, not everybody has to go to college. That's right. But every kid should have college as an option if they want to do that.
Right.
For the kids who don't want to go to college, no. But you know what those kids are going to do? They're going to go out into the workforce and they're going to be expected to learn on the job. And when you learn on the job, you're given a manual, you're given some stuff online, and you're said, hey, do this training, lead yourself, figure it out. And what employers are expecting is for people to come into their workforce if they have a high school diploma and to be able to get started on the training regimen. Reading on grade level is key to being ready to be trained on that job. If you go do additional career and technology at one of the junior colleges or community colleges, same thing. And if you go to college, obviously you need to be reading.
Look, you know, I watched a lot of those school board meetings with parents and students just raising holy hell. And it was almost as if they expected the campus to be this giant group hug. We know Miles comes from a military background. He had a mission. He was almost like cod liver oil. Doesn't taste very good, but sometimes it fixes the problem. The other thing I wanted to bring up was the issue of zip code. Miles made the point that it doesn't matter what zip code you live in Houston, and I'll use Wheatley High School as an example. You know, extremely challenged economically. Parents have lots of challenges. You need lots of wraparound services. They've tried that. Wheatley goes from an F to a B or a D to a B school, the school that triggered the state takeover, and it's happened in 2 years. I find that astonishing. I mean, people, what do you want? Do you want a functioning school district where, you know, I had a former chief of staff say, intimate that half the kids we're graduating can't read. Not at more than an elementary level.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary to me. And I think that, you know, I hope people are taking some pause.
Yeah. So, anybody who's done any data work in Houston can talk to you about the green arrow, right? And the green arrow is whenever you're looking for performance, poverty, crime, there's this green strip that kind of runs down I-10, stretches up towards the Heights and down towards Meyerland, and then comes to a point around downtown. And that's where the good stuff happens. And anything outside of that green arrow is where the bad stuff happens. And everyone expects that. Demographers expect that. You know, researchers expect that. And what the kids, the teachers, the principals, superintendent, and his team were able to do was scramble that up, right? So right now, there are no red dots on that map for Fs. There are a few handful of orange dots for D schools, but there's a whole bunch of A schools, a whole bunch of B schools. And that is a change in destiny. That's telling, you know, those demographers that zip code does not equal destiny, to your point. And I think that should be super encouraging because those kids feel it. You know, when reporters for different outlets were going around, they're interviewing kids and they're expecting kids to blow up and get upset about what they were experiencing. A lot of them were telling reporters the truth. And that is, well, we're actually learning this year. And the teachers are kind of, you know, making us do things all the time. And that's not a bad thing. And it kind of did away with those stories. So when you talk to kids, most of the kids are saying, yeah, you know, like some of my teachers don't like this, but I feel like we're a lot more on point this year. So,
Paul, this comes as the state passes school choice and parents will have the opportunity to take their young people elsewhere. HISD has had a drop in enrollment, but if you know your kid's going to a quality campus, a campus that is performing, perhaps it gives you pause in terms of pulling him out for private or any other option.
Yeah, that's the bet Mr. Miles is making. So two things are happening in Houston. One is people aren't having kids, right? Two is people aren't moving here. Our friend Bill King talks about this all the time in terms of you know, U.S. citizens from other states or other parts of the state moving to Harris County. That number is like zero. It's negative. So that's true. And then the people who are here aren't having kids at the same rate, right? We're talking about, I forgot what the number is, but it's abysmally low and it's just racing to the bottom. And so, you know, that's a stressor. Kids aren't enrolling in kindergarten to begin with because they don't exist. Second thing is there are still some people doing homeschool, and some of those homeschools are not what we would think of or hope for homeschool. And now you do have this additional pressure coming from the education savings accounts, the vouchers. And that's going to put a lot of pressure on schools to do the best that they can. You know, I like the idea of competition. I think that's going to be a good thing. And school districts, principal superintendents are going to have to figure out how to achieve more with even less.
Competition. this year, the Texas legislature, particularly on the Republican side, talking about a huge investment. They're labeling it an investment. There was a lot of rollover money from the previous biennium. Paul, is the increase in per pupil allotment sufficient to get the job done for those superintendents who have a very tough job?
Yeah, so a lot of that money is directed and restricted money. And so as an example, some of that money's coming in as teacher incentives and teacher bonuses. And those are dollars that superintendents really can't touch. It just passes straight through. Other dollars are set aside for security improvements and upgrades. And then there's some things that are set aside for other purposes. And so the money that gets to the bottom line where superintendents can choose what to spend their money with, it's not as much as people might think, but it's still there. Superintendents have essentially come to understand, you know, these are the cards we've been dealt. We're going to do the best that we can. But that's, again, happening as your enrollment is dropping. Right. And so for every kid that leaves a district, it's somewhere between $10,000 to $14,000 less for that district. And those are pretty substantial. It only takes like four or five kids to leave before that impacts. That's one less teacher I can pay for. Or that's, you know, one less set of books that I can buy for the district. So it is a very difficult task people are being asked to do. And a lot of this is unknown. There's not a handbook, you know, as a former superintendent. We didn't get trained on how to handle like tremendous tightening of budgets. It's something you learn on the fly. Thankfully, our area has a lot of great soups.
Hey, look, you know, we're talking about teachers getting a substantial raise. Mm-hmm. I've sat with those teachers on your back porch. They're tremendous people.
Yeah.
And they're extremely worthy of this extra compensation. It's not huge, but it does help keep good people in the classroom.
Yeah. So I think, and this is a key issue for the state, the key issue for the state is talent. And you have to recruit, grow, and retain your people. And retention a lot of times is you got to keep them in the classroom. For a lot of people, and me at the time that I was teaching, the only pathway to earn more money is to go into school administration. It's not for everybody. It's not a lot of fun. You deal with books, butts, and buses all the time, you know, and that's the only way that you could figure a way to make more money. What we're hoping for is a system that rewards teachers who are excellent in the classroom, and they can get administrator-level pay without having to leave the classroom where they're doing the most important work, which is impacting students in the classroom every day.
I can tell you, I had a number of extraordinary educators who inspired me to do better than I would have done had I not known them. And I hope for every kid, they have two or three or four, even one of those teachers.
Yeah. So one of the things I hope for in our, you know, communities is we start doing a better job of encouraging kids to go into the classroom. You know, usually the first people that tell kids don't go in the classroom are teachers. They're like, yeah, you don't want this job. And the kids will say, oh, I don't want this job because you got to deal with those kids. And it's like, you're one of those kids, right? And they get it. They're like, you know, teachers are treated with disrespect. They have to handle discipline stuff all the time. They have to handle kids being disrespectful, you know, and, you know, they have administration coming in their room and writing things up and they feel that pressure. And they're like, why would I do that? What we want is to elevate the profession of teaching so that our best and most talented want to get in the classroom. Other countries have figured this out, right? Like the Netherlands is a great example where if you're a teacher, you're considered to be one of the most important people in society. You're right there with engineers and doctors and nurses. And if we get to that point, I think we have to get to that point because COVID proved something that people were wondering about. It's like, what if every kid just learned online? Well, you got a hot mess, right? And that didn't work. You need the human connection in order to you know, understand, connect, and get kids to go where they want to go. I hope we can start moving that direction, but it starts with the conversations we have in our own homes.
In terms of engaging the community, do you have a line of advice for Mike Miles, who I've spoken with and seems like a really nice guy, although he comes off as abrasive to so many in this community?
Yeah, so I think Mr. Miles is working really hard to get the community to understand and appreciate the hard work that the team, you know, of HISD teachers, administrators, central office people have, all that hard work that they've done to get to this point. And that's part of it, right? So to me, this is almost like the ER work is not done entirely, but it's pretty close to done. The next phase is really engaging all of the parents who were pretty happy with their schools already, right? Their kids were in good classes, they were in good programs and magnet programs, IB, AP programs, and then figuring out what those parents need, right? So I was a parent of a kid, or am a parent of a kid who, you know, wanted those additional programs, keep those people happy.
All right, let's toast HISD as we go to break. Red, White, and Bruise will be right back.
I pledge allegiance to the red, white, and blue.
Welcome back to Red, White, and Bruise. I love that title. I'm Gru, Greg Grugan, your host. I'm here with my good friend Paul Castro, education and public safety advocate. I'm going to get straight to it. Most of you probably heard about an incident. Imagine driving home from an Astro game with your son, and suddenly you encounter an enraged driver who pulls out a weapon, fires into the car, and you look back, and the most precious thing in your world has been hit. That's what happened to Paul Castro. And every day he lives with the result. His son David is in a better place, at a place we wish he was, and we wish he was here with us. Paul deals with that every single day, with grace, with courage, with heartache, and he has turned what is an incredible tragedy into an avocation to do what his son David would have wanted him to do, which is to make the world better. Paul, part of making the world better is advocating for the rights of victims. How do you do that?
Well, one of my goals is to try to stop others from winding up in this path that I'm in right now. And so what I advocate for is for people to open up their minds to the possibilities of a really terrible thing happening to them. Then wake up that morning, you know, July 6, 2021, thinking that that was going to happen. Instead, I was excited. My son was excited. You know, we were driving. We had tickets to the Astros game. We thought it was a great day. When people start to think that this could actually happen to them, they do get activated around reaching out to their public, you know, officials and saying, hey, we want you to think about policies that may be uncomfortable for some of the people in your constituency, but that are important to keep our community safe. There are people who are very outspoken about locking up people who are, you know, guilty of crimes, especially violent crimes. Like, oh, well, there's a reason this person did this. He had a bad upbringing. And as a community, we need to be able to say, and they could have done better, right? They're mostly he's. We'll just kind of reduce it to he's. And when those bad people do bad things to people like my son David, who did not deserve what he got, right? And sadly, a lot of people in the community, when, you know, this person was identified, jumped to his defense and wondered, oh, what did the person do to deserve this? And it's this magical thinking of pushing away responsibility and thinking this couldn't happen to me. So one of my public advocacy pieces is to tell people this could happen to you. A really terrible thing could happen and change your life forever. And as a result, if you want to protect yourself, your loved ones, and your community, you have to advocate and you have to tell people, like Harris County commissioners, spend money on the things that make our community safer. Fix the jail, okay? We need to vote for judges that hold people accountable when they do bad things and not feel compassion for the bad evildoer, but instead have compassion for the person who was hurt and for the community members that would be hurt if this person got back out on the street. And that's what I spend my time and energy doing.
Hey, you've taken this story to state lawmakers, and it's like, and I'm using your words, exhuming David, throwing him out to the public, and then going back and burying him.
Yep.
And yet, you have had the courage to do that. If you'll hang with us, I want to talk about the organization that you're now leading. to try to make things better for all of us. Red, White, and Bruce will be right back.
I pledge allegiance to the red, white, and blue.
Welcome back to Red, White, and Bruce. My good friend Paul Castro here. TCVU, what is it?
It's Texas Crime Victims United. It's a self-organized group of volunteers. We advocate on behalf of other crime victims ourselves. A lot of us have cases that have not been resolved. Thankfully, David's has. But members of our community are still trying to get justice for their beloved who've been injured or killed in many cases. And what we have done is we organize around this idea that we need a voice at the Capitol. We need a voice at County Commissioner's Court. We need a voice, you know, in with leadership. And that's what we do. We also have people who come in and they try to ask for, you know, some advice and counsel. We try to do that. So Texas Crime Victims United, it's a wonderful organization. And again, we're just a small startup. We just got started and we have a lot of work to do.
All right. I want to close this episode by raising a glass to David.
To David.
He'd be proud of his pop. I know he is. All right. Greg Grugan here at Red, White, and Bruce. Let us know what you think. I'm having a blast. Best job a guy could ever have. Drinking beers with smart people and getting paid for it. We'll see you next time.
I pledge allegiance.